Hello, and welcome to How Do You Feel, the show that is dedicated to your health and wellness and is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. I am your host, Lorraine King, and today I am visiting with the Reverend Dr. Linda Butler. And she is a hospital chaplain in Dr. Butler. Well, actually, it's Reverend Butler, really. I just put doctor in there because she deals with cancer patients. But anyway, Reverend Butler is here to talk to us today about National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. But she's going to be highlighting the role of pastoral care in the treatment and healing. That welcome, Dr. Correct. Butler. Reverend Butler.
Thank you. And as we talked earlier, most people know me and call me Pastor Butler or Pastor Linda.
Okay.
Because of the pastoral care that
okay.
I do. Yes.
Pastor Butler, it will be.
Okay.
So, Pastor Butler, did you have some highlights you want to talk about regarding National Breast Cancer Awareness Month? Because you've been involved with patients, and then you've also been a patient.
Well, I like the title of your program, How Do You Feel? Not necessarily because of how people feel physically, mm-hmm. but how do they feel mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? That's all a part of being well.
Okay.
It goes into the whole mixture of wellness. So as we observe National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we will hear a lot about the research that's going on, making sure that women are educated in terms, again, of wellness, physical care, and also, in terms of talking about nutrition and, just different things mm-hmm. like that. But one of the things that, not just with breast cancer, but with any crisis situation that helps a person to accept, deal with, manage, get better, is emotional and spiritual wellness. So that is something that I was able to provide for breast cancer care 20 years ago when I was a resident chaplain at Broman Healthcare in Bloomington. I was there studying pastoral education in terms of clinically, how do you do that? So what happened with that was with all of our book knowledge and practice, we still had to, at the end of the residency, provide a care project that would be applicable in care.
Okay.
And so at that time, I had my breast cancer experience. I was diagnosed in May of 2000. So now this is 2003. So looking at my personal experience and caring for others in the hospital in that clinical setting, I chose to do a pastoral care project highlighting what now is known as Pray for the Cure.
That's very appropriate. 3 years after experiencing breast cancer, you have to choose a project, and so then you see the relevancy of choosing care for breast cancer patients.
The one thing that allowed me to be able to listen to the doctor, go through treatment, all those things was my faith. When I followed 18 other women for 12 weeks, some that were newly diagnosed, others that were in the recovery and just things that were going on at different stages of having breast cancer or to have had breast cancer.
How did you get these 18 women? Did you recruit them, or are they just regular patients that came through?
They were patients that came through Broman Healthcare and also in Peoria at Methodist Medical Center and also at OSF St. Francis Medical Center.
Okay.
So I was working with ladies in three hospitals plus the OSF St. Francis Breast Care Center, when they had someone who was diagnosed with breast cancer and they knew that person was spiritual,
mm-hmm.
they would call me and say, you may want to talk to this person, or we said to them, would they be interested in talking to you?
Okay.
So that's how I ended up with my 18 ladies.
Okay.
Yeah, as we call them now, my bosom buddies.
We're thankful for those 18 ladies.
Yes, because again, what it basically concluded that there are two strong areas that helps a person to be well overall, in addition to the physical wellness, mm-hmm. and that is faith and family. All 18 ladies going through the questionnaire, just having general conversation, would give credit to their faith and their family for helping them through that health crisis and having an outlook on it in life that I am still living, I'm not dying. And it, again, faith and family.
So positivity.
Yes, positivity with truth. With truth. So when I went before the hospital panel to make my presentation, I just said to them, after giving my research and findings with these 18 women, mm-hmm. I said, if we can run for a cure, bike for a cure, shop for a cure, do all these things that people are thinking of doing, created to do, how come we're not praying for the cure when this research says that women are making it through or able to manage this illness because of faith and family?
And how was their reception to your proposal?
Well, I passed the panel.
Okay.
And it just happened to be in August of that year when I was finishing up my residency. So in 2 months, Breast Cancer Awareness Month was coming up. So I took my findings and I made contact with the local Coleman Memorial affiliate.
Okay.
And said, how about us doing a Pray for the Cure in Peoria.
A collaboration.
And so I turned over all my research, as well as had good conversation with the executive director of the Coleman Memorial affiliate. She took it to the board. And then the next thing I know, I got a call back in National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And she said, we think we would like to do this. And so that was October of 2003. And the first Pray for the Cure was held in Peoria in May of 2004.
Wow. And then when did you become, are you a full-time hospital chaplain? You're now working as a hospital chaplain.
It's one of the three things that I do under pastoral care.
Okay.
So I've been a hospital chaplain for 20 years now. I had primarily worked in pastoral care for a local mission organization for about 17 years as a community pastor, which was the Southside Mission.
Okay.
Overseeing the ministry of women and children in the shelter. 3 years ago when the shelter closed, I then said, Lord, you know, my thing is pastoral care. I want to stay in it if you would so allow me to do that. I truly enjoy it and feel it's my calling. And from that, I've ended up now being a pastor at a church, a hospital chaplain, and a chaplain overseeing family transitional care for a local funeral home here in Peoria, which is T.W. Parks Colonial Chapel.
So you're wearing three hats.
I'm in three places doing particularly one thing, and that is pastoral care.
Yeah, but the audience is a little different.
A little different, but people who are experiencing a crisis. And a lot of times that's what's going on in church because of life issues. Definitely that's what's going on in the hospital because now they're there. And definitely at a funeral home because they've lost a loved one. So there's a lot of grief. So there are some things that are just common in all those areas as it involves pastoral care. And with those three things, I also apply what is my clinical training as well.
Okay. Now, when you made your presentation and you decided to collaborate with at Susan G. Komen Memorial and have pray for the cure. What were you doing then? Were you a pastor then, or you were? What was your role?
At that time, I was a community pastor.
Okay, community pastor.
At the Southside Mission.
Okay.
And when then, we were developing Pray for the Cure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then that went for how many years?
It's been 20 years
20
now.
20 years.
With Pray for the Cure in Peoria, Bloomington Normal, and Springfield.
But you worked at Southside Mission for 17?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, doing pastoral care for women and children in the homeless shelter.
So how did you help spread the word, you know, that this type of specialized counseling was available for those women? Or was it word of mouth, or was it the Susan G. Komen Memorial staff helping spread the word?
Yes, we had a great collaboration, and still do. Mm-hmm. With the Memorial Chapter, Susan G. Komen Memorial Chapter. But also, it was just now being a part of that community, or we call it that involunteer sisterhood, as I referred to earlier, mm-hmm. that some of us affectionately, as we say, you're my bosom buddy, mm-hmm. Because of what we now share and know in terms of breast cancer. So word spread it that way. And then, of course, we were doing the events every year. And we take anywhere from 4 to 6 months in planning. And there's a committee of women that come forward to do it. So, and then we promote it. So people, they do hear about Pray for the Cure through media.
Okay. Well, I'd like to hear more about how this was an extra layer of support for women going through this. But first, I'd like to tell any listeners who may have just tuned in that you're listening to 106.3 on your FM dial. The radio station is WPNV, and the program you're listening to is How Do You Feel, which is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. I'm interviewing Pastor Linda Butler, who is a hospital chaplain. She is a pastor, and you are a
transition care specialist working with families that have lost loved ones.
Okay, so you do grief counseling, and you help people cope with navigating through the cancer. And now it may not necessarily just be breast cancer, but a lot of your patients are breast cancer patients, right?
Some are. In the hospital, we have individuals with all types and kinds of cancer.
Okay.
So, yes.
And so what has been the response from not only the women who are the recipients of this care, but also you said there's a panel of women that helped plan this, you know, how they responded to that?
Each lady brings their own personal story mm-hmm. to the table in terms of their faith and their family. And so we create an annual program or prayer service that highlights those things that include, you know, music, inspirational music, others who can give reflections of their journey with breast cancer. We have a litany where we affirm one another mm-hmm. in what it means to have had this disease and our perspective on it. And then we have a fellowship time where we, after the prayer time, we do sit around and talk with each other and just continue to meet new survivors and thrivers. Mm-hmm. And so it grows that way as well. We also Pray for the Cure emphasize October as Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we would send out letters to the churches in the month for the month of October mm-hmm. that the churches would take time out to acknowledge, to encourage, and to just be there in terms of a strength, again, that spiritual strength for those who are going through treatment and those who have gone through treatment and yet want to maintain, you know, that outlook on life that I'm living, I'm not dying sort of thing. So we ask churches as well to do the Pink Sunday.
Yes, I do recall that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the
But that's a national thing as well. We just try to remind our local community about Pink Sunday.
Okay. And now some of the women that you meet with, is there a set pattern that you use before you talk about it, you just dive into it? How does that work with you meeting a patient for the first time in the hospital setting? or you're talking to somebody at your church or in the community, you know, what information do you get from the person? Or do you have to build a rapport with them first before they start confiding and that kind of thing?
You do, because many times the last person someone wants to see come into their hospital room is the chaplain.
Really?
Yeah, because a lot of people equate the chaplain with someone coming in to help someone manage a sad or bad situation.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yes. Yes. So perhaps those that are more familiar or have a, what we say, a strong spiritual life, mm-hmm. they may be the ones a little bit more open, you know, to us, like, okay, good. There's someone that I can have a conversation with about my faith, you know, and we can pray. But others, if that's not a big part of their life and you have the chaplain coming in, they may begin to wonder, well, how are they going to help me with what I'm going through? You know, are they here because now I've been told I need to consider end of life matter? So the majority of the time, people are a little bit reserved when the chaplain comes in.
Now, I know that sometimes somebody may ask for a chaplain, but do you get assigned to a room where the to a patient, and they don't know that you're coming, or they're not familiar with your services, you know, if they're skeptical and a little reluctant or reticent to see you?
Well, I'm just glad that Carl Methodist, where I'm a chaplain, mm-hmm. that people are told about chaplains upon a mission.
Okay.
And they are asked, would you like to see a chaplain?
Okay.
People are asked, you know, do you prescribe to a particular faith practice or spiritual practice, because the hospital wants to support whatever would be mm-hmm. helpful for that individual to get well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we can, and if someone says they want to see a chaplain, mm-hmm. then we are, through the system they have, they're notified that someone would like to see a chaplain.
Does it often in the hospital wind up being, more family members involved, or do you wait for the patients to say, I'd like to have, you know, a family member here, or do you typically just deal with the patient?
We primarily work with the patient and the medical team.
Okay.
We're part of the medical team as well. Prayer, it may not be that chemical care in terms of a medication, but it does have a physiological effect on people. Because it's, you know, what we believe and what we think about mm-hmm. does affect how our body responds to situations. So if someone is available to help you talk through an issue or, mm-hmm. you know, just know that your presence means a lot to them, that's a lot of what Chaplaincy Care is about. It's really a ministry of presence, that people know there is someone available. You may not be saying anything to them. You're not trying to, you know, give them all the answers. Mm-hmm. But if they want to talk, you're there.
You're there to listen.
You're there to listen. You're there to be supportive, as well as, you know, truthful, you know, to help them to see and know where they're at and then how they can best respond. So when you talk about hospital care, that's what we do. But likewise, you know, working with breast cancer patients, it's talking about some of those hard things as well, you know, especially if someone has children, you know, or other major responsibilities. What does this mean? A lot of what we do in chaplaincy care is allowing people to begin to develop or establish a new purpose in their life. It's called finding purpose in your crisis, because people do begin to think about things and they may begin to think differently about things. So that's all a part of the process of moving forward as well and getting better.
Now, when you meet with the people in the hospital, which you may see multiple times, once they're dismissed, do you still maintain contact with those patients?
No.
Once they leave the hospital, that's it. But if they were in the community or in the church, then you would still have contact with them.
Yes, may do that. Because, again, it's where they may want to hearing about Pray for the Cure, again, going back to the breast cancer patient, one who's in recovery, or as we say now, those who are thriving, they may want that community of faith to always be there for them. The one thing we do at the Pray for the Cure, we have a signature or theme song that's called I Will Believe. And the chorus basically says, I'll pray for you, you pray for me, and may our God above answer with the miracle to see. I know it's hard, but we still must believe. Through faith, I will believe. So if you go to a Pray for the Cure event in Peoria or Bloomington Normal or Springfield, that song is going to be right there. And those who are survivors and thrivers will be linked arm in arm or somehow move closer to one another. And so you begin to have that physiological effect where it just feels good. It gives hope. It provides courage and you feel loved. People have to allow themselves to also know where they are spiritually and emotionally. You can go through scripture and see that people dealt with daily life issues just like, you know, we do today. And they had strong emotions about it. And they questioned their faith. You know, even Martha and Mary questioned Jesus when their brother Lazarus died. You know, saying, if you had been here, our brother would not have died. And, you know, just different things like that. And just looking, I even like what, you know, David says after the child that he and Bathsheba had, and the child dies, but he's gone through this very hard emotional time. Tell, you know, the people stand around just wondering what's going to happen to David. What is David going to do? And if he's this way now and the child is alive, how is he going to be when the child dies? And when they have to tell him that the child has died, you know, he gets up and says, well, you know, now, you know, I'm going to go to him. He can't come to me. And he, you know, start to enter back into the normalcy of life because there was a changing point. Something changed that he could not change. And so now how do I live with that? How do I go on? And that's even part of what happens with the whole breast cancer situation. You know, this disease invaded my body. I got to get the treatment, take care of it. Now I live life differently. I think differently in many ways. And so, you know, we see that with David in the scripture. He had a different perspective on life.
Now, how might your conversation differ if you're counseling someone that is looking at, you know, end of life situation? Would that counseling be different? Are you still having them keep a positive outlook and
help? They don't necessarily have to. Meeting them where they're at. This may be a time where they're very angry that this has happened. This may be a time of great guilt, a time of great fear, all those things. So you have to allow a person, you have to begin first with where a person is at. I remember when I was a intern in the chaplaincy program and following a resident. And I said to her at one point, you know, how do you do this? And she says, well, you have to go into the valley with people. And I'm like, how do you do that? She said, we will teach you how to go into the valley with people. But not only that, how to help them come up out of the valley.
Okay.
Because that's really your job at a point. You got to go in with them. You just can't stand at the top and holler down into the valley.
Okay.
You got to be able to go down in the midst of the hurt and the pain and all the questions as well. And then the two of you come up out
together.
Of the valley. Yeah, together.
Because if the person's down there and you're at the top, the person's still going to feel alone.
Right.
But if you're there with them.
Ministry of presence.
Okay, okay. So that helps the emotional outcome as well as the physical.
Yes, okay. You got it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking about my faith, and I know that was what got me through, you know, with a good attitude.
And most of us, we do, you know, as we're going through a hard time, the one thing we long for is the presence of God because of the power, you know, for those who are strong in their spiritual walk is the power he has to change things and the comfort. So you want to know he's there. Ministry of presence.
Because people like to feel connected. I mean, we were just
no one really wants to, on their own, choose to be alone. Mm-hmm. We are not made to be alone. We are made to be in community.
So now tell me this. If you're a hospital chaplain, are you on 24-hour call?
Some chaplains are. The most I've done pretty much is, 13 hours. Doing some clinical work and then being available for a medical crisis, be it in the emergency room or, if there's a code blue or there is a death, going to those sort of things.
Because I was just wondering if somebody was having a crisis or something, could they request you, at the midnight hour?
They can do that. And usually the nurse, again, as I mentioned, chaplains are part of the medical team. Just as you would call in one disciplinary to bring, respiratory to come in and things like that. If you see a person needs that emotional and spiritual support, then the nurse knows to contact the spiritual care department and request a chaplain to come in.
Do they normally have 24-hour coverage?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, we pretty much split it up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's always somebody there.
There's always someone to cover. Yes.
Well, then I feel good. I hope the listening audience, feels more confident and feels encouraged, to be able to request that kind of thing.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for talking about the totality of wellness.
Yes.
Not just physically, but also emotionally and spiritually.
Yes.
And that contributes to the healing process, because if anything is out of whack, that could delay it.
Yeah. Body and mind, mm-hmm. we're talking physiology. Mm-hmm. And that does have an impact on a person, both mental wellness and physical wellness.
Okay. Well, thank you, Reverend Dr. Lemter Butler, Pastor Butler, for enlightening us and sharing your experiences, with being part of the clinical care team in the hospital, being a part of the care team at the church, being a part of the care team in the community, and also helping to ignite the Prayer for the Cure support service that so many others are engaged in to be an asset to women who might be going through that, and their families as well. I know the families probably appreciate you.
Yes, at the Pray for the Cure, we make sure that there is a part of the service that does acknowledge and support family.
Yes, because sometimes they get left out and everybody focuses on the patient. And because sometimes you may have to counsel the person who's being a caregiver.
Yes.
About
yes.
Okay.
Yes, most definitely.
Okay.
And that's why even in the hospital, as you mentioned, what all of you do, we're there not only for the patient, we're there for the caregiver, be it the nursing staff or the family that has come in. So we're there basically for everyone that's involved in the situation.
Okay. Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that you've been listening to How Do You Feel? And we've been with Pastor Butler, who's talking about the pastoral care that she gives in the particular area of the clinical setting, as well as in the community and the hospital. This show is aired on Saturday at 11 a.m. It repeats on Sunday at 7:30 p.m. And if you missed either broadcast, you may go to the WPNV podcast page, which is wpnv.org. Look for a podcast, and this one is called How Do You Feel? And you can still get this information. And once again, I want to thank Pastor Butler for coming in and talking about this, and also for acknowledging the October as National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so this, you probably want to remind individuals, to be sure to check out things that don't seem right, mm-hmm. with the breast, or, and that could be a man or a woman.
Both.
Okay.
Both. And this month allows you to have that special emphasis. There's a lot going on. A lot of attention is being given to it. And so therefore, make sure that all the steps that will help you to be well.
Now, Pastor Butler, so is it also true that people can get financial assistance if that might be an issue?
Yes, yes. There are navigators within our healthcare system that help patients with breast cancer, and they will help them to navigate what their financial needs are as well.
Yeah, because that would be very tough. If you were thinking about that, it's not like juggling, do I take this pill or that pill? It's just a life or death situation.
Very much so.
Okay.
Well, thank you again. You're welcome. And I look forward to having you come back next year.
Oh, I will be, Lord willing.
Okay. I've been your host, Lorraine King. And to the radio audience, I want to thank you for listening and hope that you join us again next week.
Now is always the right time.